Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, 5th of July edition of the program. A delight to have you with us. I'm Joe Donahue, and hopefully you had a beautiful 4th of July holiday. Hopefully it was nice. If you had to work, I'm sorry, but hopefully it was even quiet at work because nobody else was around, and that's kind of nice too. That's a holiday in and of itself. And if you didn't have to work and you were with family and friends and celebrating what I think is widely being considered perhaps our last Independence Day, you have a really good time. Hopefully that was nice. You celebrate, you eat, you watch people blow a lot of stuff up. It's a lot of fun. So happy 5th, and I hope you had a beautiful 4th. We have a lot to talk about today, and we'll get to it. And I just want to say, we're going to talk about the thing that we've been talking about for the past week. And I would just like to preface our conversation by saying, the point is that we're still talking about this a week later. I don't take fault for that. I don't think we should be blamed for that. I think that this is a legitimate issue that needs to be discussed, in the fact that we're still having to talk about it sort of brings us to the point of why it is such an important issue, because it still, in a week, really hasn't been addressed in any great meaningful way. And that is fairly incredible. I don't know about you. I'm guessing. I don't know. I'm guessing you talked about this a lot over the holiday.
Yeah.
I know I did. So we can compare notes and get busy on this Friday morning. And my goodness, wouldn't you just love to be in the UK where they say, we're going to call an election. We have an election. We have a new prime minister. Move out by noon. You're done. How great is that?
No, I like the 2-year election cycle.
Yeah,
it just goes on forever and grinds people to a
really fun
shadow of themselves.
Who does the packing? How do they pack that fast?
I don't know. That's a very good question. Although you never see them really go past the front door, so who knows? They may just go out the back and go back to their villa until it's ready.
Move in with other people.
That's right. Let me introduce everyone to you. We are pleased to welcome Teresa Bourgeois to the program, public policy and communications expert. Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. We'll see how we are. It's all good.
It's all good.
It's all up to the voters.
At 9:15 on Friday morning, it's all good. Aaron Pasitti joins us, Siena College professor of economics. And Aaron, you've been out and about traveling the world. Tell us if you care to,
sure,
and you don't mind. Where have you been in the world?
I went with my wife and her brother's family. We went to Peru and then visited Machu Picchu for about a week and a half. So it was.
Something.
Traveling is impressive. I've seen a fair amount of interesting places, but this was awe-inspiring to a degree that I really haven't experienced. And we were there on the winter solstice, and since the whole complex of Machu Picchu is built around the worship of the sun god, that it was a very special day. But I took a much-needed break from following the news when I was there, and it was really good for my mental health. And then upon landing and trying to catch up with everything that happened late last week, I had a nervous breakdown. So I'm here, though.
Yes, here you are. As we are trying to figure all of this out, and it's very hard. And we'll get to more of this in just a moment. Also, we welcome our good friend Mark Whitman, who is here. He not only is he here, but he brought his son George with him. And we love Mark. We love George, and it's great to have you both here. How are you,
Joe? I'm good. Thanks. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Very nice to see you. I have to say, so we joke occasionally on the program that Mark is, and this is no, I'm not dissing the other panelists, but Mark is the perfect panelist because when he comes, he brings these amazing donuts with him, and they're just, oh my God, they're incredible. So he brought donuts today. This is from Bitchin' Donuts, and they're in Albany. And And they, they're very creative. And the donut that we have today that Mark brought us, one of them is a hamburger donut. Go, George.
Hello, Joe. And I don't mean to be mean with this, but you adults are wrecking the climate, racking up debt, and threatening democracy. I'm just checking in on behalf of my generation, seeing what we're being left with here.
You have donut creativity. It's all we can come up with.
Yeah,
we've
it.
Given up. We don't know what to do, so we're left with donut creativity.
But in a bright spot, having seen Machu Picchu and seeing this donut, it's a pretty close race in terms of awe-inspiring things that I've seen
this month. Crazy.
I mean, that is a work of art.
So
I have no idea how it tastes.
So it's a donut that's been cut in half. Think of a normal glazed donut. And then it has, poppy seeds on the top. The half the donuts make the bun, and then there's some sort of I'm assuming icing that is the burger
or a brownie.
It's a brownie.
Oh, it's a brownie. Whoa. It is a brownie. And then
I worked in a bakery.
And then. Did you make these?
Sometimes my brownies look like that, though.
And yeah. Oh, okay. All right. And then
not in a good way.
And then there is ketchup and mustard and bacon and cheese and there's a lettuce on the a little tomato. It is just something to look at. I'm gonna post a picture on my Josie Donahue Facebook page.
It's astoundingly creative.
It's it's very cool, I must say. It's really neat, and I hope you enjoy it. I think we are all looking for things to help us to say, this is something that we can enjoy, and I think you will enjoy this. So I will send a couple photos out, and I hope you enjoy them. All right, let's get started on what is going on in the world. And we welcome you to the program. All you have to do to write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. I don't know what today is going to be like because it is a holiday weekend and a lot of people are out and about, so I don't know what kind of traffic we're going to have. I can tell you that over the last week, we have been inundated with letters. So if you have any intention to have your letter read on the air, you probably want to get in early. We'll guide through this morning and see how we do. All right, let's go to the first story. I do want to talk about. We'll get to Great Britain in a minute, obviously that is a huge story and one that we need and want to discuss. But we also need to discuss what is happening here in this country, and that is with the President of the United States, Joseph Biden, and his the post-debate, the debate performance and his dealing with that debate. And that continues to go on and to roil the Democratic Party, Democrats, and just, I think, people in general, because we don't quite know all that is going on. So let me just try to bring this up to and people will say, you know, none of this is funny, and I agree. I don't think any of this is funny. I think it's
deeply serious.
Tragic.
It's deeply serious, and I think it's deeply tragic. But when you pick up your copy of the New York Times and you see the headline, "Biden tells governors he needs more sleep," like, that's worth a little chuckle, I think. Like, it's sad, but by the same token, really? That's okay. So Biden tells governors that he needs more sleep and less time, less work at night. This comes after a meeting on Wednesday with governors from around the country, including Governor Kathy Hochul of New York, who sort of stepped in on her own in her own way on Wednesday by saying that the governors were in agreement that they would be they were in lockstep to be behind the president. And many governors said, she does not speak for us. there's that. Then there's the conversation. There's so many aspects to the story, and I don't really know how to even triage them. But the president told the governors that he went to go see the doctor on Monday, which is fine, and that's a good thing, except that the press secretary told the press he had not been to the doctor since the debate and had not had any sort of she now backtracked and said that it was he did not have a full physical, but he told the governors that he went to the doctor on Monday. All right.
About
his cold. That's right. So then, which we were told was a cold at the beginning, and then we were told it was exhaustion upon returning from, which brought up the, I need more sleep and I can't travel as much as I used to. And we can discuss, like, do we want that? Do we need that in our president? Is that something that we're willing to give up? That to have leadership and capable leadership and to have a leader who's 81 years old and rising, that's something we're willing to give up. And by the way, let me just stop everyone who's writing right now saying, okay, but Trump just spent time in his bedroom with a Diet Coke watching TV. Got it. But again, I think it's a legitimate question to ask. You know, how active do you want your president to be? I promise I'll give it.
I know.
We're all champing at the bit here.
Okay.
We all
and
are.
Then
don't worry.
There's just so much. Then there's the George Stephanopoulos interview tonight. There's a lot of weight being put on this. And the thing that I can't believe is they're sending him out to a rally in Wisconsin, and then they're doing the debate immediately following the rally.
The interview.
And then, the taping of the interview. Okay. Then there was some question as to about how the interview would go. And I don't know what they have finally ended up on, but I believe they are going to run the interview in its entirety from start to finish. And without editing. However, initially they did say they were going to edit it for time, and then they were going to provide a full transcript. I don't know which of those two they will end up with. It may depend on the actual length of the interview, but that's what they're claiming now. Because you may remember in things like with James Comey and others, George Stephanopoulos and ABC don't have the best record of fully broadcasting the contents of interviews if they see that it hurts a certain person or whatever. Okay, there's that. Then, and here's the big one, and this is where our friend Teresa is going to, I'm sure, jump right in here, but. The other big issue is, and this was one of the main stories in the Washington Post and the New York Times today, which is that Biden is going back and forth and saying, he's not going back and forth. He keeps saying, I'm in it. I'm not going anywhere. And then the money people, the big deal Democratic donors said, no. No, this isn't working out, and we need to hear something, really soon, and to figure out where we're going to go and have a backup plan. Finally, and I'll leave it here. We have also heard from reporting from many different news organizations, from the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, to CNN, that there is a backup plan being hatched within the Biden campaign, that if the president, and this is not any indication that he is going to drop out, but that if the president were to drop out, that he would make those delegates available to his vice president, Kamala Harris, and they would look for an orderly transfer of those delegates before the which would officially happen at the convention, but would be brokered prior to.
Well, actually,
the convention. No. Okay, go ahead.
So that's a weird technical point, which is in theory the convention, but there's a situation with Ohio that's unclear, that the convention is after the deadline for Ohio. Typically in the past, Ohio has passed legislation just changing the date so that they could be on the ballot. They did a back and forth on doing that this year. Ultimately, they did. But Heritage Foundation and others say that they're going to sue. And so the Democrats, even though ultimately Ohio passed the legislation changing the date, the Democrats felt that they needed to do something sooner. So they were going to have this virtual delegate count in advance of the, I think it's an August 9th date for Ohio. So everybody's focused on the convention, but there may need to be something done before the convention because of the Ohio situation. That's still, I think, there's a lack of clarity. They did pass the legislation. I'm not 100% sure why they still think that they need to do something virtual, but in any case, it may need to be before the convention.
One aspect, I threw out five other things going on. So, panel, feel free to take your whack at the pinata in any way that you see fit. Let me ask this very pointed sociological question. We'll begin with Mark Whitman. Mark, what the ever-loving hell?
Joe, you at the beginning of this, you said we're still talking about it. We're actually talking about something else now. And Teresa, I'm going to have to ask you, just stay calm for a second. What we saw was a horrible debate performance that confirmed our suspicions that Joe Biden was too old to serve as president. What we're dealing with now is a cover-up. That's why we're still talking about this. And frankly, the two make Joe Biden ineligible to be our next president. He's not capable. And the fact that his advisors are lying to the public and that many Democratic leaders are facilitating this lie is particularly painful when you look at the choice that we have in this election. If you truly believe, as I do, that it's between right and wrong, to have the right lie to the American public in order to achieve their means runs counter to what we should be doing at this juncture. Now, I haven't said a lot, but I've said enough, and I'll throw it open to others.
I'd like to jump in here.
Yeah, we're good. We're gonna skip news. So you'll have some time. We'll get through opening statements.
I generally agree with Mark. I'm less concerned about his mental acuity and mental fitness to serve. He's proven himself an extremely capable president during an inordinately tumultuous time in American history. The reason he should have dropped out of the race the day after the debate is that he's not going to win. He has no chance of winning. Voters have been saying for 2 to 3 years, his age is a factor. Whether you believe that is a disqualifying issue or not is irrelevant. If voters believe it, they're not going to vote for him. And if they don't vote for him, they either stay home or they vote for Trump. And then we enter what will largely be an entirely new era in modern American history, and a very ugly one. So I don't care about the acuity. Is he fit? Does he need naps? Should he travel less? I don't care about that. He's not going to win. The fact that this question has been posed at all, should he drop out, tells you what the answer is. And to Mark's point, that the fact that the Democrats are dragging their feet, I don't want to say, maybe they're not covering up. Maybe they're planning a larger strategy. But you would think by this point that would have come out. The longer we wait, the worse this is going to be for Democrats.
I think that's being very kind of you. There does not seem to be a strategy here whatsoever. And if there is one, it's come in the last 24 to 48 hours as opposed to minutes after the debate. All right, Teresa, it's all you.
So I think what we saw at the debate is both candidates demonstrating cognitive concerns. And I know not everybody agrees with me on that one, but I think that Trump spoke in a very powerful voice. But if you listen to what he said, if you listen to what he couldn't say, if you listen to the torrent of lies where he couldn't answer questions, so he just, somebody said it. So I think that they both showed cognitive decline. I think it was, and I I think, Mark, if you're right that this is a long-term cover-up, then that means that Speaker Johnson, Republican Speaker Johnson, was part of the cover-up. That means that Republican Senator Langford was part of the cover-up. That means that former Speaker McCarthy was part of the cover-up. There's a lot of people that have been around Joe Biden that are not, you know, that would like to have seen the demise of Joe Biden, that spent time with him, talked to him, heard with him, and you know, I don't think they're all complicit in this. So that's why I think that this notion of complicity, I mean, of, you know, this is, I just disagree with what you just said. But bottom line is, I do think from the night of the debate, I thought that there has to be a transition here from the candidate, and it's just a question of how and how long. And I think the fact that there is planning going on was signaled by Nancy Pelosi, who said, we're with Biden now, right? But there are things that they have to figure out. And if he just said the next day, I'm stepping aside, then there'd be even more chaos than there is now. I think that the key signal, and I don't know if I said it on air or off air on Monday, but is where the money people are going. And clearly you saw in reporting overnight that the money people are setting up contingency funds, they're holding back their money. They're clearly going in a different direction, and they have found it, because the issue with the money is there's been a lot. I mean, the Biden team has raised a ton of money, but the question is who can use that money. The restrictions on who and how, and so they have to figure out how to transfer that money. And so you see now in the reporting overnight that they're beginning to figure that out. They also have to figure out how to transfer the delegates. And you know, what that process is. Because the most important thing, I think, is when they announce his withdrawal, it has to be a handoff. This notion we're going to have five people and we're going to hear from all of them, it's going to be a free-for-all, there's not time for that. Democracy.
So you said when they...
Oh, I think it. I've since the night of the debate, I thought it was inevitable that they have to shift. It's just they needed, and that's what I try to say on Monday, they needed time. You need to figure... First of all, he has to come to terms with it and the people around him. But second of all, that you need time to figure out the process.
Why were they not making calls to congressional leaders? Why were they? Why did he not call?
He was not making calls.
Right.
But why, his people were on the phone during the debate. Talking
why
to people.
Why wasn't he calling Chuck Schumer? Why wasn't he calling? Why was he not calling the governors? Why wasn't he calling?
I don't know the answer to that. But to me, that's... No disrespect, but that's kind of noise in the system. I mean, there was communication, and I don't know why,
stalling.
But I don't think, yeah, what? Yeah, you
stalling.
Don't want to have, you don't want to force
buying the, some time.
You don't want to force the question, right? And the other thing is that I think everybody wanted to wait for the first round of polling to see, because in fact, the polling is not near. Now, don't hear me wrong on this. The polling is not nearly as bad as I thought it would be, right? And it didn't. The
but
first
it's still
round,
really bad.
That's why I say, don't hear me wrong on this, right? I thought it would just, you know, crater, but it didn't, weirdly. But in any case, I just think that the question now, I think the main question now is what happens? And the biggest challenge, it's been the thing all along, is will people support a woman candidate for president? And unfortunately, we've seen this movie, and it didn't end well with Hillary Clinton. So will they support Harris? If people think that they won't support, and I'm sure there's polling right now, and there has
a
been
a woman and a woman of color.
Right. Well, and then, so then people talk about Whitmer. Well, you're not going to replace an African-American woman with a woman, and a woman who doesn't have national experience. That's ridiculous. So the question is, what's the ticket? Now, one of the persons I've talked about before is I think it's the person that's most interesting to me, though I don't know everything about him, is Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona. Astronaut, decorated war, decorated military guy from a border state, worked on the border compromise. He has all, you know, he has a lot of the right things. But is he the right person? I don't know. And is he at the top of the ticket or he's the vice president? Because when they announced this, everybody has to be for it. And no matter who they pick, it's not going to be everybody's first choice. But all the Democrats, the Black caucus, the Women's caucus, the, you know, the Conservative caucus, everybody, including the Republicans who want to not be for Trump, they have to be all in and it can't be, you know, nitpicking at the person. It's just got to be all in and let's get this done because there's not time.
Okay, so I have one more question for you and anyone else who wants to take a crack at it, and then we'll take a break and come back. But I understand what you're saying. If that is the strategy, quote unquote, why is it... They're making such a big deal about this interview. And they're also talking about his schedule.
Because you're in until you're not in. And I didn't interrupt you.
No. I mean, I understand you're in until you're not in. But you're also, he's still saying, I'm in this. I'm your candidate. I'm not leaving you. I mean, these are very definitive statements that he's saying. So they're going to send him out to three rallies this weekend, one in Wisconsin today. Then he's going to be doing the interview, and then you go to the NATO summit. So I just don't know. They come here, right? So is how does that work?
Well, you know, I mean, it may be that what I just said doesn't happen and they hang in there, but I can't imagine it with the money people leaving them. And I guess what I'm saying is that not necessarily that they were at that mental space the night after, but I just think it was inevitable, and that the system has to work itself through. And I think both for campaign purposes, to keep the money coming in, and I think because of global calm, you know, he has to keep being president, and there just has to be a transition here. This impacts what's going on around the world. You know, you have to show a sense of stability. He has to show a sense that he's still in charge. But again, I will also say, and I'm going to repeat it again on the side, I do not understand why Trump is not getting the same scrutiny and the Republicans, they're not demanding of the Republicans. Why you're not demanding of the Republicans what you're demanding of the Democrats? Because if you look at Trump's behavior, it's equally scary about his ability.
Because Trump is a dictator and has the entire Republican Party in tow under his thumb.
But why is the media not a massive drumbeat challenging that as well?
They have.
They're not scrutinizing every single word.
This man is a threat to democracy.
They did not scrutinize his debate performance the way they have Biden's. And I'm not saying it's wrong
because Trump's
the
leader in the poll. So why would Republicans?
Because they just said, it's all baked in. The crazy stuff he said is baked in. His inability to answer questions is baked in. His cognitive issues in that debate are baked in. His cognitive issues in the Fox is not carrying his speeches anymore. Listen to his speeches. Listen to the sharp thing. I mean, the cognitive issues with Trump are equally concerning about whether or not he is fit.
Right.
To be, I'm not saying it's not Biden. And Mark, you laugh, but I think it's a concern.
But he's the front runner, and that's why nobody's saying anything, is that it's like, it's his election to lose at this point.
I mean, he's sitting back and watching the party.
He's giving Biden as much rope as possible.
He's not sitting back. Did you see the stuff that he's posting?
He's put the Democrats on
the
defensive.
The stuff that he's reposting is dangerous.
About the tribunals and such.
Yes. Yeah. The stuff that he's posting about Liz Cheney, yet again putting her life at risk. The stuff that he's saying is doing is dangerous. And a lot of the stuff that he says about the, you know, drip faucets and sharks, it's incoherent. It's incoherent. Mm-hmm. And he's a danger. That's why we all have to be all in on it. But he shouldn't get a pass.
Well, first of all, I laugh because I, like Trump, would rather be electrocuted than face a shark. But
he didn't understand what electrocuted meant. He thought he had a smart question. He had a question that made
elocution,
no sense.
Electrocution. It doesn't matter.
Well, so I think the good news is that. There's two sides of this coin. You can only fool Americans so much. That's why nobody believes the litany of explanations or excuses that Biden's offered. But that's why Trump's standing in the polls only improved marginally. And his hardcore support is so small. That's the good news here, Teresa. If the Democrats, by one method or another, get a respectable candidate, they should be able to manhandle Trump and his
That's
lies.
Why I like Kelly, because I think, you know, Kelly's parents were police officers. And I mean, I think if he has the oratorical ability, I think he could tear him up. He has on paper the skills. But you know, I don't think this is right, but the Republicans knew that Ronald Reagan was, you know, had serious cognitive issues, and they let that go, right? For a long, long time, everybody did. They let it go because they had people around him who were handling it. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying that it's happened before.
But two things about that. First of all, we know a lot more about the brain and about cognitive science than we did in the mid-'80s, number one. Number two, he was still able to get up and during not only rallies but during debates and be fully functional. So that's a huge difference.
But also you're talking about Biden's workday ending at 8 o'clock. Again, I'm not defending Biden, but I just think a lot of this rhetoric is, whoa. What about Trump when he was in office and his work habits? About his work habits?
I'm not going to argue that point with you because you're absolutely right. I'm arguing the point that if you are the president of the United States and you want to remain the president of the United States, why do the words, "I need to go to bed early and take a nap," come out of your mouth?
Right.
Shut up. Stop.
Right.
Don't say anything.
Right.
Don't say that. That week I had a bad week. I got tired. Fine. But
he said that in a meeting, not in front of a microphone, but yes.
Joe.
But you knew it was going to be reported on. Yeah. George.
For Biden's team, this is the final stage of grief. Or should I call it denial at this point?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's something to be.
But, you know, there's a Democratic strategy here, and that is Trump is just manhandling Biden every way imaginable, and Biden is falling into the trap. He's been calling him Sleepy Joe for how many years, and now Biden comes out and admits this? Like, he's playing into his hands, and it's a guaranteed way to lose. So the Democrats have a strategic advantage because Trump thrives on chaos, but only chaos where he can control the narrative. And if you throw some competent, energetic person with institutional and more public support, all of a sudden, that's upended, and Trump is thrown into a chaotic world that he can't necessarily control. He can do the name calling. He can make all these threats like he's always done. But again, this comes down to who's going to win. And we either begin American autocracy or we try to claw back some of those losses.
And that's where I think that the Democrats, the Pelosi's, the Schumer's, the Hakeem Jeffries, who, by the way, has, you know, stayed pretty quiet, just keep saying, "I'm listening to my members," because I think he is, right? And because they need to figure, because it's not just who's going to win the presidency, it's going to who's going to win the House, who's going to win the Senate.
Sure.
Now, there's some little lights of, you know, hope in all of this, because there are, first of all, I think that the Chevron decision for SCOTUS was a complete overreach, and most people don't know what Chevron is. But when the people who do know start talking about the impact in people's everyday lives and why that's a problem, that energizes a whole group of people who otherwise might not have been energized. I think that the immunity issue was a way overreach, and it stops the jury cases, but it requires public hearings. So on all of these issues of the next couple months, between now and the election, you're going to have the potential to have public hearings getting all this information out about Trump.
All right.
But the question is, who's the Democratic ticket?
We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We we're going to go to letters. And we have many letters, and we'll check in with the voice of the people and see what they have to say on this post 4th of July, on this Friday after the 4th of July, as we go into what for many is a holiday weekend. We'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday. And it's a busy day that we have a lot to talk about, and we have a lot of letters. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to as many as humanly possible. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Ellen writes, "I don't care if he runs or not. What I want him to do is use the power given to him by the Supreme Court in every way possible."
No, we can't be like them. Yes, everybody's saying that, but
she's
being
facetious. It's a great letter.
Okay. "I'm voting Kennedy," says Ted. I would love to hear more about Robert Kennedy Jr. Speaking of being physically fit, he works out every day, avoids processed food, and would be the most fit president we have ever had. There is the brain worm.
It's not about fitness. It's about who can win and defeat somebody who has said, I want to be dictator for life.
But it's also fitness to serve.
Exactly.
I mean, he's not fit to serve.
Right.
God bless him, he's not fit to serve.
Where do brain worms poop? That's what
stop
I...
Stop about the brain worm. I can't even... Oh, it's so gross thinking about. I'm sorry.
It's like a nano dune or something.
I've said this before. I'll say it again. I'm not as fascinated by him having a parasitic worm in his brain. But the fact that what it ate caused it to die, I find just to be fascinating.
I don't know why, but this is just that.
We're grossing Teresa.
It has a really high ick factor for me. I don't know why, but
well,
I can't stand
listening.
Well,
I think all of this has a high ick factor, I think.
But for many other reasons, including, I mean, he just is not fit to serve. And if you vote for him, you're voting for Trump. I mean, that's a vote for Trump. If you want to vote to end democracy, have at it.
I have news. If Biden still runs, given I'm in a state that I know is going to go for the Democrats, I'm going to protest vote for somebody. Let me just put it that way. But that's a whole nother. That's a nuanced argument here. But
if Biden stays on the ticket, I mean, you're voting for the whole team, and the whole Biden team is far better than the Trump team. Just look at Project 2025. That's mm-hmm. everybody's homework. Everybody listening, look up Project 2025.
All right, let's, but don't do it until after the show.
After the show, over the weekend. That's your homework for the weekend, listeners. Sorry. Right now, listen
to
the...
We want you to hear us talking about politics and donuts.
Oh, my God. I still can't get over that hamburger donut.
Jerry says, let's say Biden stays in and wins. Whoa. Realistically, he will not have the cognitive readiness for the next 4 years. So, essentially, we are already voting for Harris to be president, whether we like her or not. So, why not like her and put her at the top of the ticket now?
Well, that is... I'm sorry.
No, go.
Well, that assumes Biden's going to die in his next term.
No, but I think what they're saying is...
Or tap out.
What they're saying is Harris is doing more than they're telling us she is.
Yeah, but there's an enormous amount of cabinet members and advisors, and whatever you think about Biden's mental acuity, I still think he understands who to take advice from and how to surround himself with people that are more competent.
What if Biden not only... I realize this, there is a 1% chance of this happening. But what if Biden says, okay, I'm going to resign? Biden becomes president.
Harris
becomes president. Names a vice president.
And then
you take the ticket to the convention.
Well, this is what kind of Teresa and I were kind of bouncing back and forth about. There's something going on behind the scenes. Yeah. There has to be something going on behind the scenes.
If you listen to some
strategy.
Of the people who are really good at this and the kinds of answers that they're giving, they're clearly discussing. And if you see how things are rolling out, the things that people are talking about, like inevitably, you know, some early polling, now the money people in somewhat, not unison, but enough key people, and Abigail Disney out front as she, you know, is brave to be. But I think you see pieces beginning to come together.
All right. We go to this letter from Joy, I feel like we're missing the bigger picture which is the 34 convicted felon was found all over Jeffrey Epstein's log and can't complete coherent sentences. The only thing the media can think to talk about is whether or not Joe Biden should drop out of the race when he's been actively doing the job as president for the last 3.5 years. Okay, I'm just going to stop right there just for a second. I understand the point of the letter. I get it. But that debate performance was halting. Right. That debate performance was to the point that all the stuff we talk about, that Teresa has been saying of the money people and the congressional leaders, was all caused by that.
Well, I would argue, possibly in line with what this letter writer has said, is that Trump's debate performance was equally unnerving. He spoke in a strong voice, but But if you listened to what he said, and if you listened to how incoherent some of those answers were in the non-answers, and I listened after the fact to the person on the street response, and a lot of people picked that up. But the media has been like fixated just on half of the only one of the two people in the debate. So that's I know you're
because the media
with me,
is petrified. We're going to get a dictator for life because Biden won't pull himself out.
I just
of
don't
the
believe you
spiral.
Can. You can't say that Biden's entire point this entire election has been that Donald Trump is an existential threat to democracy, and democracy dies if he becomes president again. And then you see that this is your candidate.
Well, I don't. I'm not saying you give both of them a pass. I'm saying you scrutinize both of them in an intense way.
Joe, to you and the letter, the point is how to beat Trump.
Right, I agree. The point is how to beat Trump, and I don't think that, and I think that is what the look. I just the media. Some in the media.
Thank you, Ira.
Some in the media, that. All that they can, you know, this letter writer says that all they can think about is whether Biden should drop out or not. Well, I think when you have the president of the United States, I mean, this isn't like this is just us being breathless. This is we are covering the news, which is the governors, 30 governors in this country got together and said, we want to meet with you because we don't know what to do and we're worried about down ballot. We're worried about the Supreme Court. We're worried about the Congress. We're worried about the Senate. It's not just focusing. There's a lot at stake.
But you can focus on both of them at the same time. Anyway, it's not that I don't think Biden should be focused on. I think that it's giving Trump a pass for his cognitive issues, his incoherence.
At the end of the day, he'll still be a felon.
And on top of that,
and his voters don't care. That's the New York Times. Plenty of places did a thorough fact checking of what Trump said during the election. They're not giving him a pass.
In fact, CNN said there were so many that they were just going to put it online because they didn't have the time.
He's not,
every time they say it's all baked in, as if they're saying it's okay. It's not.
The media is
okay.
Not calling the shots here. This is the Democratic Party saying you need to get. The Democratic Party is questioning Biden's legitimacy. If Republicans thought there was a chance of Trump losing, I guarantee the same thing would be happening on that side.
Why aren't there more Philadelphia Inquirer editorials?
I don't know.
I think we're missing the punchline on Trump. He's beatable. His core support is 30%. The guy debated it against someone who is cognitively incapable of being president, and his numbers only went up a little bit. We can destroy.
Exactly.
We can destroy this guy. Nobody's looking past Trump. The whole point is to destroy him. One thing I'd like to talk about, Joe, maybe we do it after a few more letters, is I think the Democrats have two ways to go on the selection process here. It's either an anointment or it's something a little more exciting. And I saw a great editorial in the Washington Post about the more exciting view. I think we should talk about that, but I don't want to get in the way of any letters you want to do before.
All right,
break.
Thank you. I think let's do a couple of letters here, and then we'll go to the break and come back. Russ says the reason the media isn't asking questions about Trump is because his behavior during the debate was nothing new. He's been spewing lies and crap since 2015, while Biden's appearance of cognitive decline was stark and more surprising. Trump's performance didn't indicate cognitive decline. It indicated Donald Trump being Donald Trump. No surprise there. Then there is this letter from Z, who writes, this is simple. Biden needs to get out in public interviews and show us his capabilities. He must talk the economy, the border, and Trump's policies. If he can't do this effectively, he should resign. Well, I agree with that letter. Why hasn't he been doing it over the past week?
Exactly.
Why was he not out?
He was on two radio shows yesterday.
Oh, big deal.
No, I'm saying he was.
He needs to be.
I think that's all noise.
And your point.
That's all. Yeah, he was on radio shows yesterday.
But they were taped.
But that's all noise in the system. It's really a transition issue now. It's what do they transition to? I think now really it's how do they transition? How do they handle all of the boring technical stuff?
The finances, the delegates.
The finances, the delegates, how they're going to rally all the key voices. so that everybody's in lockstep. Everybody's okay. Whoever it is, it's not going to be your favorite, but it's going to, you know, like everybody's going to get behind this person.
If you're going to lose to Trump at in 2024, you might as well go down swinging. And the Democratic Party is just no pun intended, sleepwalking into an authoritative ruler.
Bob, I'll end this with Bob from Albany, who says, "This is why the Roundtable is the best comedy show since Curb Your Enthusiasm."
Oh, come on.
"Your guest said Trump is a dictator. If he's a dictator, why is he a former president? This radio show has been a must-listen since the debate. I'll take low gas prices, low inflation, lower food prices, no new wars over the current conditions." And that from Bob. By the way, I'm very proud of our stable of comedy writers. I think they've been doing a great job. Mm-hmm. They've taken this moment and really done a great, great
job. And I think Bob could join the group.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm known for my hilarity.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we'll take a break. We'll have more fun and hilarity right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday, the 5th of July. Welcome to the program. I'm Joe Donahue, Aaron Pacitti, Mark Whitman, his son George, and Teresa Bourgeois, all with us on this Friday morning. And we are talking about what you'd expect us to be talking about probably, and that is still the general election. Of what will be going on and who the candidates will be. And it's hard to believe here in July that we don't know that yet, but that's the situation we're in. We have many letters. Okay, here we go. Everyone listening to the show, reading New York Times editorials, et cetera, follows politics in the news. We do not need convincing about how unhinged Trump is. The voters who really matter are only a few thousand in a few swing states, and they watched the first 15 minutes of that debate and decided to not vote or to leave the line for President blank. Biden gambled big, and he lost. We need a new candidate immediately, anyone who can prosecute the case against Trump and excite people to vote. Biden cannot do that. That is from Randy. Then we go to Susan. Just stop. Stop. Just stop. It's Joe Biden, or we lose. It's Joe Biden, or there will never be another election. Will, period, you, period, please, shouty cap, period, shut up, period.
Absolutely not.
Go read something by Heather Cox Richardson. Have a nice, cool, tall, iced tea. And that's from Susan.
I'll say this right now. If Biden stays in the race, we get a Trump presidency. That's almost guaranteed at this point.
If he does stay in, then people have to just, I don't know.
Steel yourself for a decade of horror.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that is, what's being overshadowed by this, you know, and rightfully so, are those court cases. And those court cases signal where we will be, and then more so with another Trump administration. And so there is something to be said. I mean, if it does come down to Trump or Biden, I believe you still have to vote for the Biden administration, because the Trump administration, we know where that's going. And if you're not sure where that's going, read Project 2025. Read what they propose to do. Look at the impact of these Supreme Court cases. It's a very scary time.
We got this from David. Joe, you are breathless. You've been breathless since last Friday morning. In fact, the entire panel for a week has been breathless. Honestly, I've begun to wonder if the entire media empire, including WAMC, are actually petrified that if Trump goes away, you'll have nothing, shouty caps, to talk about. Please, enough, exclamation point. I will admit to this. I'm obsessed with the story. I'm not sleeping. I'm getting up in the middle of the night to check to see if anything has broken. I'm watching every press conference. I am addicted to cable news that I have gotten away from over the last 3 years, 3.5 years. And I think I know the reason is because the stakes are so high. I'm sorry. while I look at this, of course, as a voter, as I look at this as a U.S. citizen, but as I also look at it through the lens of history, this is unbelievable. We've never seen anything like this, and I find it to be equal to everything else, fascinating. It is fascinating for all of the reasons that Teresa so beautifully articulated at the beginning of the show. There is so much that needs to go on and to happen, and so many gears and levers that need to come together to make this, to do whatever happens. And I just think that that is fascinating. And also, the whole situation is really troubling.
And remember, the last time this happened was with the Johnson administration when he stepped away. And the Democrats lost and we had Nixon. And think about those years after. So this has to be done very carefully. And I'm obsessed not just with the Biden equation, and I'm just repeating myself, but I'm obsessed with the lack of attention, equal attention to Trump and his cognitive issues, because while we focus on this all the time, a lot of people don't, and they just get the headlines. And it's not because they're stupid. It's not because they're uninvolved. It's just because they have busy everyday lives.
And
I think we cannot just say, well, that's Trump being Trump. It's very dangerous.
And to the line about you're petrified that if Trump goes away, you'll have nothing to talk about. Oh, try us. I think we're ready. I would give that in a second.
There is nothing I would like more than to watch Trump ride off into the sunset and be able to actually discuss policies.
But remember
and the forward path of the country and what it could look like, debating the cognitive merits of a orangutan who's been dipped in a cotton candy machine is one of the least exciting things I have
but
to
just remember that
look forward to.
Sorry, George.
To the letter writer, we could talk about wars in the world, the environment, and the fiscal state of our nation.
Yeah.
But
I mean, right. And we have a lot to talk about. We have a lot to talk about. And I don't think that's absolutely right. I don't think we're not petrified. We're not, we're not making money off this. This is a conversation that we have, and I would love for there to be other things to talk about. But I think
maybe you can speak better to this than I can. But there are entities who are making a lot of money off it, like Murdoch.
Oh sure,
yeah, no, of course, yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm pointing to.
But you know, this is an unprecedented time in American history. I mean, maybe there are historians who know better than me, but at least in modern history, I can't think of a time where an incumbent president was battling an existential threat opponent and considering or being the suggestions that he drop out of the race so close to the election.
Well, Johnson.
There is no historical precedent for something of this magnitude. Yeah, but Nixon. Nixon ain't no Trump.
Right, you're right. There wasn't. But there was certainly extraordinary turbulence.
Sure.
Extraordinary turbulence. It was threats of a different kind, but there was internal turbulence. It was external turbulence.
Sure.
But I also, this is why I, again, Project 2025.
And a war.
But when you have the Heritage Foundation, who's the frame, and this coalition of groups, I mean, this isn't just Trump. If Trump goes away, this group who have come together and orchestrated this over the last many years, orchestrated the Federal Society, orchestrated the takeover of the Supreme Court. That didn't happen because of Trump. Trump was the tool, right? He was the vehicle because he was easily manipulated. But that was, 20 years in the making,
oh, yeah.
Right?
I got excited. I thought Teresa called Trump a tool. Go ahead.
No, there's that.
That too.
But a tool and a tool.
But just with how bad this is, we have Mr. We finally beat Medicare, and then Mr. I'm trying to overthrow democracy here.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's Teresa's point, too. I mean, it's not an equal comparison. And but again, this goes back to what Aaron was saying. This is about winning. This is about what the Democrats' chances are of winning against someone who could. And I have not read, you know, there were a couple of shots in the media, and I certainly understand that, and I believe that they have certainly played a role in some of this. However, in reading so many of these editorials and pieces that they're doing, every one of them talks about the importance is because Trump is a threat.
But that's because you read the whole thing. You don't read the headline. And the headline is what most people read. Biden's got to go, Biden's got to go, Biden's got to go. But it's not Trump. And the, you know, we finally beat Medicare. What he was really trying to say there was, in fact, a big thing, right? I mean, he didn't say it right, and I'm not making an excuse for him. But think about the difference. What he was really intended to say is we beat Big Pharma, and we're controlling prescription drug prices to save Medicare. That's what that was supposed to be about. And that gets to his amazing accomplishments.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Just big the parallel with Johnson. Johnson had all these incredible accomplishments, historically incredible accomplishments, but he also had the war, right?
Sure.
And then people couldn't get past that. And I'm not excusing him. I'm just saying that there are policy successes that Democrats can and should run on.
I'm done. I mean, I'm going to assume that the Democrats come to their senses. And the interesting thing I've been thinking about is there are two ways to do this. James Clyburn and others have indicated that Kamala Harris should sort of inherit the mantle. I frankly would caution them and say, look, the job of the vice president is to fill in if the president is unable, but it doesn't anoint you as the next candidate for president. I think they're getting those two confused when they say that. But there are two ways to do it. One is a hand the mantle over upon the announcement version. And then there's something I actually think, look at where Donald Trump came from. He was a reality show president, basically. You know, this country falls in love in a matter of weeks with couples that are entirely fictional. I honestly think I'm a little tongue in cheek here, but the Democrats ought to form a committee. The Obamas ought to be on it. I think if you could get Liz Cheney or somebody like that on it, it would be brilliant.
Yeah.
You call in six candidates or however many, and you say, here are the rules. You're going to go out each day. We're going to have a theme. We're going to have a theme in one of the swing states. Day one theme, for instance, is what we're going to do for women versus Donald Trump's literal legal abuse of women, okay? And after a couple days, the committee and some polling, you call up one of the candidates and you say, I want you to throw your support behind the remaining five. By the time you get to the convention, you've got three or four left. But the rule is you're in this game so long as if you're out, you're still wholeheartedly behind whomever we choose. You hog all of the oxygen from Donald Trump between now and at least the convention, if not beyond. You could assure Kamala Harris that she's going to be no worse than vice president if you want. I understand there's a technical issue about how to move the money, but if they need help, I'll show them how to do it. There's got to be a way to move the money.
They had a few days. Okay. They figured out the money thing.
But something, and I'm a little tongue-in-cheek about this, but something that lets the people have a say and takes up all of the oxygen in the air out of Trump.
Yeah,
and every day the comparison is what the Democrats can do for you versus what Trump is threatening you. And if you're off message, you're out of the party.
Yeah.
I mean, out of the running. And then maybe at the convention, you let it, you have some fun because there are two or three left and you let some fur fly. But as long as everybody's on board after it, there's a way to handle this. You've got plenty of time. It has to be a little bit managed, which is unlike what parties normally do. But there is a way to handle this and to bury Trump when you do it successfully.
I hope this is the lesson that the Democrats should have learned 8 years ago. And that is, really, since the late 70s and early 1980s, that we've had seen the hollowing out of the middle class, we've had rising inequality, we've had almost every single piece of economic policy designed to enrich the millionaires and billionaires. And it reached a breaking point in 2016. And that's why a lot of the country, a lot of voters got behind Trump. And the Democrats had two populist candidates in the primaries, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. And the Democrats just could not read the writing on the wall and put forth the most establishment candidate imaginable. Sure, she won the popular vote, but not particularly inspiring. 2020 comes around, right? We have somebody who's trying to, clearly upend American democracy. And the best the Democrats come up with is, well, this old guy can beat Trump. There was a chance there to insert some new blood. And here we are in 2024 having bumbled one election and on the verge of bumbling another election, and Democrats still can't get their act together about a policy platform. Like, Biden's accomplished a lot, and a lot of that is a scaled-down version of the Green New Deal. But he should be talking about lower prescription drug prices.
Which he succeeded in doing.
I mean, but on the campaign trail,
I don't understand what you just said, because
to Mark's point, it's
Biden won. He was a lot of people's second choice. He won. He won, and then he went on
by a sliver
to develop.
Barely, he has barely won.
He has a. He put together a cabinet, a coalition of people, who has been, by all accounts, you know, stable and stellar. Think about all of the people who left the Trump, you know. And they left because they didn't want to be around him anymore, or they left because they were, you know, for litigation reasons, right? Or because he fired them because they were going against him. So I don't know how you can denigrate Biden for his last 4 years, because look at his legislature.
I'm not
he did
denigrating
all those
it, but he's had the
he
lowest approval rate. He's had like one of the lowest approval ratings in history throughout his entire term. He's unpopular.
But look what he accomplished.
It doesn't matter.
He accomplished
a lot, but being unpopular is not going to get you elected this year.
Well,
and that's what matters.
Actually, if you look around the world, being an incumbent is a terribly precarious position
right now
because of the basically the different shades of populism and the reactions to it.
I mean,
which is why, by the way, having Biden step aside, you get to olay the issue of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And if Harris steps aside, you can also olay the economy and the border. You can pick up every accomplishment and tout every accomplishment from Biden and say you'll continue it forward, and you're not burdened with the economic argument. Now, I don't believe, Aaron, you and I probably, I think, agree. I don't blame Biden for where we are economically, but you can't Jack Kemp the electorate into believing that same fact.
Right.
It won't work. But if you pick somebody new
There's some stuff in the economy that's not good. But given where he was, given the economy he was handed, given where we were with the pandemic and where we are now, I mean, he's navigated it better than other countries.
Yeah, but a new candidate gets to do what Trump does, which is promise rainbows and unicorns to no end, without any basis in reality, if they so choose.
Right,
and that would be a great ticket for the Democrats. Because it takes care of the biggest issue in this election. A new candidate has a magic wand. A new candidate for the Democrats has a magic wand in their hand.
And I don't.
Go ahead.
No.
All right.
I'll stop. I want to hear letters.
All right. So we
I
have.
I want to talk about Project 2020.
We have 6-5. Probably won't do that. But we have 6 minutes. I want to read letters. I'll go through them, and that'll probably take me 6 minutes. If anyone has anything quickly to say, please do. But I think you've all made your points brilliantly, so I think we're good. Then we come back. We will talk about some, oh, my goodness, good news, the jobless numbers, right? So we'll talk about that with Aaron, and we'll hit a couple of other subjects before we dismiss the panel on this Friday morning. So we begin with... Martha. Today's New York Times front page posts. Oh, okay, that's actually saying that we should talk about the jobs report, and we are going to talk about the jobs report, so there you go. KJ says, I also strongly support Senator Mark Kelly for all the reasons Teresa mentions, but he also brings special authority that might impact the gun rights impasse.
Sure.
All right.
Because of his wife and the work that they do with Bloomberg and their own foundation on gun safety.
Oh,
I said I wouldn't talk.
No, you're all right. Here's one. Teresa is right, says Jocelyn. As usual, both enjoying and getting frustrated by today's panel discussion, Teresa is spot on correct on so many points, and I'm so grateful she is not backing down, especially in her comments about the lack of press coverage of Trump's dismal debate behavior. We check in with Jay. If Biden stays, voters committed to democracy will choose him over Trump, even if they prefer another Democratic candidate. If another candidate replaces Biden, the same voters will vote against Trump. Given alternative, seems unlikely any Democrats will abandon party just because they are displeased with candidate. Voting Trump is not a consideration under any circumstances. Then we go to this letter from Will. Joe Biden had a bad night. Get over it. He's not the enemy. Stop ganging up on him. Trump has had a bad night every night. I think, you know, for the first 24 hours after that was an okay response, mm-hmm. that he had a bad night. I think even by the president's own admission,
this is
bigger than I had a bad night. But here we go. I understand the letter. That is good. Let's go to Ricky, who says, as Biden waits to make the decision, Trump is turning up the humiliation and insults. Recently, Donald Trump called Biden, quote, a broken down pile of crap who is quitting the race. Biden must announce he's stepping aside. The sooner, the better. I do think there is something to be said. I thought the Times made a good point about this in their op-ed about, in their editorial, calling for him to step out, the editorial board's piece. That here's a guy who has a lot to, that has accomplished a lot and has a chance to go out with his head held high.
And I can imagine him doing some campaigning. I can imagine both. I think that the House and the Senate, the Democrats are strong if they campaign on the accomplishments that they all worked on together, the infrastructure, CHIPS, and clean energy stuff, mm-hmm. and that he does go out on top because of his incredible legislative record. And I listened to that Trump clip. Just take a look at it. Look at him sitting in his golf cart, handing somebody some big bill, and cursing away, denigrating the president. Is that the guy you want? I mean, even Graham told him, stop swearing.
Hey.
Back to the point, he's a felon.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob. Bob says, hey, Teresa, wake up. You seem to be operating under the assumption that Republicans care that Trump is unfit mentally and morally to be president. In reality, for them, it's all about getting him into power and then his using it to remake the country into a Christian national dictatorship. We go to Stacy, post 4th of July. Have you read Project 2025? I do not care who is at the top of the ticket. I'm voting for the Democrats. The reason you are still talking about this is, Joe, is that you clearly have an agenda. I have no agenda. Teresa is correct. Focus on Trump for a while. You go, Teresa. Sorry, guys. You're off on this topic. Read Project 25.
I'm going to disagree with that a little bit. There are people, and I think most of us in this room have said as much, we're voting Democrat no matter who the candidate is.
Except we are
not the target audience. We are not the people that the Democratic Party is strategizing about. It's those tens of thousands of voters in those two or three counties in those four or five swing states.
Yeah. I think that's important because of two letters back or whatever. It's not that 30% MAGA vote that we're talking about.
Right.
It's the Republicans who are uncomfortable, who want to switch over.
The people. Moms
it's the people that Liz Cheney's trying to pull over.
Right.
It's the people that the Lincoln Project, the Republican Lincoln Project. Mm-hmm. It's the people that the military guys who wrote the retired military who wrote the letter saying, I serve with this guy. He's unfit. Trump is unfit for office. Those are the people. Those people and the so-called, what the media calls the double haters, you know, they don't like either of them. Those are the people that you need to push over into the Democratic camp column, both to win the presidency, retain the Senate, and take back the House. That's who we're speaking to.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We'll talk about the jobless report for the month of June. We will get to the last of the letters, panel at WAMC.org. We may even have time for another topic beyond just the jobs report. All of that and much more coming up. First, we're going to go over to the BBC for an update, and then we'll be back right after that. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Teresa Bourgeois, we have Mark Whitman, his son George, and we also have Aaron Pasitti. Aaron teaches economics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. He joins us this morning to talk about all of our issues, but with a special eye today on the June jobs report. What say ye?
Normally, this would be kind of big news, but in the grand scheme of things, this is just an aside. The unemployment rate went up from 4% in May to 4.1% in June. So a very small uptick. The economy created its 42nd month of consecutive job gains at 206,000. Wage growth clocked in at 3.9%, continuing to outpace the 2.6% inflation rate. So, remarkably good news. The labor market remains exceptionally strong, but not strong enough that it's going to lead to any type of inflationary spike down the future. So, early in the year, we had some unpleasant inflation surprises when it was coming in higher than expected. So the Federal Reserve said, well, we're going to keep rates higher for longer. Over the spring and summer, we've seen inflation surprises on the downside, meaning inflation's come down faster than many people thought. But the labor market still remains relatively hot. Workers still have access to jobs. They're still confident that if they lose their job, they can get jobs. So the implication of this would normally mean Biden could run on, hey, 42 consecutive months of job growth. The unemployment rate is the lowest it's been since the late 1960s. And give himself the credit he deserves for some of the policies that have created that. Explaining away inflation, I think, as Mark pointed out, is a much more complicated topic that you probably wouldn't want to get into on the campaign trail. But for ordinary consumers, for average people, getting a job remains relatively easy. Bargaining for higher wages remains relatively easy. And the fact that the unemployment rate is ticking up very slowly and inflation is coming down slowly means that consumers and businesses will start feeling some relief as the Federal Reserve very likely lowers interest rates at least one time, maybe two times in 2024, and then a handful of times in 25 and 26. So again, this should be good news. This should be a story that the Biden campaign is out there promoting, 42 months of consecutive job growth, unemployment's at a 50-year low. Workers are finally, workers are seeing real wage growth. And that's just not the case. But in terms of, people's average life, the average worker is seeing their income grow faster than the cost of living. Getting a job and confidence in getting a job has been high and growing. And it means that the Federal Reserve is likely to lower interest rates, which will reduce consumers' debt burdens over the next few years. So the labor market's cooling, which is what the Fed wants. It's not freezing, because that would send us back into a recession. So this should be good news for an incumbent heading into the final months of an election. But all of this just seems to be outshadowed by other issues.
Two questions. One is, some people think unemployment rate going up might be a bad thing, but does that signal that more people are going back into the workforce? That was one question. And I know it sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So I was wondering, because it would be good if more people were going into the workforce. And the second question is, you heard a lot of reports going into the July 4th weekend about this is historic amount of travel. And I was wondering, isn't that a signal that people are feeling better about their own personal economy, because if they're out vacationing, traveling, that they feel more economically secure, so that these economic gains are being felt. I'm saying it as a statement, but it was really a question.
I understand.
Is that an indicator or not?
Let's do the first question. The 1 percentage point increase in the unemployment rate from 4 to 4.1% is a very small combination of an increase in the number of unemployed workers, and that could be due to either job loss, but also a small fraction of that is workers that are re-entering from the sidelines now that wage growth is picking up, whether they were out of a job or were doing family care or whatever. So a combination of both. So some good news, but businesses are becoming a little more hesitant with hiring. So that's kind of the downside.
I guess a lot of the hiring was in the health sector, which would be a good thing, right?
It's government, healthcare, construction, and leisure and hospitality. But those are the industries that have, with the exception of government, have been playing catch up since the pandemic. So the point is that the Fed raised interest rates to cool the economy off. That's what they're doing. We're sacrificing some unemployed workers to help alleviate inflation, but that was the goal all along. To your second point about consumer confidence, so in addition to reading, Project 2025, I urge everybody over the weekend to read the Federal Reserve's most recent survey of consumer finances, which is probably a much duller, less exciting read. But they ask interesting questions that get to the heart of the issue that you pose, and that is, when individuals are asked about their own personal financial situation, a majority of them, it's like two-thirds, say, my financial position is solid, I feel economically secure. But when those same people are asked about the state of the national economy, right, it's, well, the national economy is in the dumps. So somehow, two-thirds of the population is okay themselves, but think that a majority of the country and the way the economy is progressing is just in the tanks. The stock market's going down. The unemployment rate numbers are a lie. Inflation's actually—
But that's
10%.
Not what's happening.
No. So what you believe is that—
Stock market's record high, right? But it's not. But the stock market's not the economy.
Right, exactly. So to your point, consumers do feel confident personally, but what they project in polls about the state of the economy and therefore their opinion about the two candidates tells a very different story. Political bias is informing their view of the national economy. Their bank account and job availability and wage gains are informing their opinions about their own financial security. So it's a disconnect. But you can— Don't listen to what people say, but watch how they spend their money.
Mark Whitman.
Well, I guess I should mention Aaron. Aaron's got a PhD in economics. I don't. If I took Aaron's class, I might fail because I actually don't believe that interest rates consistently have much to do with economic activity and inflation. I'm more of a pure monetarist, frankly. But I do accept— And I also think that part of this disconnect and what people think about the economy, I keep going back to when every time I check out at the grocery store, I always hear somebody react to the price of their groceries. And I've asked the checkout people, has that dissipated at all? And they say, no, it's increasing because people are still nervous it's not going to stop. And I may feel comfortable, but that doesn't mean I like what's happening, and I may blame Joe Biden for it, sure, as a lot of people. I think if you're a monetarist, you definitely think you're improperly blaming Joe Biden. But I think Aaron's point is well taken, which is in a normal presidential cycle, this would be the talking point of the day for the incumbent president. We're not going to get to that point in this cycle. And as we said earlier, I actually think the Democrats are better off running somebody who can allay the economic track record of the last few years, even though I personally don't think Biden's to blame for why it is people feel the way they do about the economy.
But the House and Senate folks can run on this. Whoever the Democratic ticket can run on this, because I think just because it's not the top of news today, I think that doesn't mean the Democrats won't run on this and compare it to the economy that Trump left us, which was in the toilet.
And it's important to point out that whoever the Democratic nominee is— Mark, you're absolutely right. People are concerned about inflation. They see it at the grocery store primarily. That's something that you buy every week or every couple of days. So it continually gets reinforced, even if airline tickets or ticket prices are falling, or, you know, the coffee you're buying prices are falling. The issue is that to the extent that Trump has an economic platform, it is reducing immigration, which is going to create a labor shortage, particularly in food processing. So if you think grocery price inflation is bad now, wait till Trump deports these undocumented workers and wait to see what happens to your grocery bill then. Tariffs on Chinese-made goods get passed on to consumers. No matter what Peter Navarro or Donald Trump say, taxes get passed on to consumers. Businesses eat some of the costs. Consumers eat another part of the cost. Trump interfering with Federal Reserve policy could make it more expansionary, which would be— yeah, I can see Mark shaking his head. If you want to talk the monetarist thing, that could lead to inflation.
Healthcare.
And making tax cuts that are deficit financed permanent with an already high deficit and debt. So Democrats should say, you think inflation's bad now? Sorry, wait until this guy's elected.
And if they dismantle the Obamacare, then that
makes
it harder for people to pay for their health insurance. and you know, and a range of the other policies mm-hmm. that will and if he wants to stop the infrastructure spending, he wants to stop the clean energy spending. All of those are what's churning the economy. I haven't heard him talk about chips because he probably thinks that those are something he can eat. But I'm sorry, I'll stop talking.
Shot though.
The Fritos Act.
All right, we just have about 2 minutes left in our program, and I want to. So, who would like to talk about what happened in Great Britain, Mark?
Sure, we can talk about it. If you look at the United Kingdom, it was in shambles. The Conservatives had cut back on spending going into the pandemic, and whether it be healthcare, education, support for poor children, everything started to fray. Their position on immigration became entirely unpalatable to almost every thinking person in the country. I mean, deporting people to Rwanda as an answer for immigration was ridiculous. And the liberals did two things that they, one of which was inevitable, which was they were the alternative to the conservatives. The other, which was new for them, was to have a unified opposition, which normally it's the other way around. And the conservatives this time were split into two. So it looks like a huge win for the liberals. They've got a lot of work to do in order to fix the problem in the UK. It wasn't surprising. And it looks, I would caution though, it looks like more of a win if you disregard the fact that the conservatives were split into basically a populist conservative and a more mainstream conservative view of what happened in the country.
I don't know. When me and my father were in London, Liz Truss became prime minister. And given the fact that to remain a conservative, you had to defend Brexit and Boris Johnson, it was no wonder that there was no talent left on the bench anymore.
You know, the conservative, to Mark's point, the conservatives, I think the conservatives' defeat in England goes back to 2008, 2009, when their main accomplishments were austerity, which you mentioned, cutting spending, and Brexit.
Yeah.
And you see that the only advanced economy that has a slower growth rate coming out of the pandemic than England, than the United Kingdom, is Germany. The U.S. is at the top. England's at the bottom. So, of course, the conservatives have been voted out.
Aaron Pacitti, George, Mark Whitman, Teresa Bourgeois, thank you all. Have a beautiful weekend. We'll be back on Monday. I wonder what we'll talk about. We'll be back.